Hi, this is Jackie Wicks with Peer Trainer, and welcome to part two on thyroid. We're just going to dive right in with Dr. Sarah.
All right, so now we are going to move on to the solution. What do we do?
Yes. So number one, I want to talk about some of the lifestyle tweaks. We did this with cortisol too. Mm-hmm. We know that giving up gluten actually helps you with thyroid function. Now, there's a whole backstory here that we're not going to get into, including testing for any problems with gluten intolerance or gluten allergy. But especially if you have antibodies to the thyroid, giving up gluten is really important. We know that it improves your thyroid function. If you have antibodies to the thyroid, if you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis or autoimmune thyroiditis, if you give up gluten, it helps your thyroid normalize. Mm-hmm. Another crucial piece with lifestyle is vitamin D. Vitamin D. We haven't talked about vitamin D yet. It has so many jobs in the body, and one of the jobs is that it helps you make thyroid hormone very efficiently. And if you're like one of the 80% of Americans who is low in vitamin D, this may be one of the reasons why your thyroid is not supporting you.
Do you have different numbers for the vitamin D than maybe Yes, if you could just give those numbers, because we're in the numbers discussion, and we briefly talk about numbers sometimes. Again, for everyone listening, we'll do it on the worksheet, but it would be great if you just gave what your range is optimal.
Yes, so this is where I put on my physician scientist hat, and there's a lot of controversy about vitamin D, right? The pendulum swings back and forth, back and forth, and here's what we know. The best data that we have in terms of breast cancer prevention is a vitamin D of about 52 or higher. Mm-hmm. The best data that we have on metabolism, including thyroid function, is for a vitamin D level of somewhere between about 52 and 90. Mm-hmm. A toxic level is when it's above 150. Mm-hmm. And what's important when it comes to vitamin D is that if you're low, if you're less than 52, and you start taking some vitamin D, I think it's important to track your level. And here's why. There's not a linear relationship between your blood level and vitamin D and the dose that you're taking. The relationship is a little bit more complicated mathematically. So don't let your eyes glaze over, Jackie. What happens
is... They just did. I'm glad you just said that. They just did. And here's interesting. There, we have, I would even say, two subgroups in Peer Trainer. One is like me, and one is completely captivated by everything that you're saying. So, you know, I'm glad that we're really serving both markets here. So if you're the ones that just glaze over, I wonder if Dr. Sarah caught you as well, because she just caught me.
Are you busted? Yes. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. And you don't have to be, you know, like a math geek like I am to appreciate this. So instead of a straight line between your dose and your level in your blood, you know, if you plot that out in a graph, it's an S-shaped curve. So what that means is that, say, you know, I have a patient who came to me who had a level of about 20 on her vitamin D. And so I started her on vitamin D about 2,000 international units a day. We checked her again in 6 weeks, and her level went up to 30. So she needed more vitamin D, but we had to keep tracking her because she was low, 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 and then all of a sudden it jumped up. Because it's an S-shaped curve, it's not a linear relationship. So the main takeaway is just to track over time so that you can figure out what the right dose is for you.
Mm-hmm.
So one more lifestyle tweak that I want to mention is, as you know, from us talking about the Godfrey protocol, the first step in these progressive steps, the first step is that we're doing lifestyle tweaks and then we're filling in any nutritional gaps. So let's talk about some of those nutritional gaps, because there's a lot of them when it comes to your thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
So one nutritional gap is copper. So there's a number of different minerals and nutrients that are essential to your production, your factory in your neck of making thyroid hormone. They are copper, zinc, selenium, iron, and vitamin A. So all of those you want to have in your sweet spot, not too high, not too low. Mm-hmm. And here's a quick story about me. When I was 36 years old, my thyroid function was low. And I got started on some thyroid medication. And as I learned more about it, you know, I told you that I turned myself into a guinea pig. As I learned more about it, I figured out that I had two reasons for low thyroid function. Number one, I was low in copper. I actually need to take a multivitamin that has 2 milligrams a day of copper. That's what I need for my thyroid to be working properly. The other thing that I found was that my fondness for sushi, for sashimi in particular, was working against me. And
I just figured this out on my own.
Yep.
3 months ago, pardon me for being, again, you guys have heard me call this an interrupting chicken, because that's what they say to my daughter in their class. I was suspecting that that was my issue a few months ago. I cannot wait to hear how that affects things.
Yes. So here's the deal. I had a medical office that was right near a Japanese restaurant, and I was eating way too much sashimi, and I became mercury toxic. So I was eating so much. I was having it maybe twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I became mercury toxic, and that was slowing down my thyroid function. It was one of the reasons why I had low sex drive and hair loss and not as much energy as I should have had at 36. So when I got rid of the mercury and I also got my copper where it needed to be, I didn't need any thyroid medication anymore. So that's why I like to start with really looking at what are some of the gaps that could be causing a problem. And what some people can do is they can just take a potent multivitamin, a high-potency multivitamin that helps to fill these gaps. That's one way to deal with it. Or you can test, which is a little bit more complicated. But if you want the easy version, you could just take a potent multivitamin.
Mm-hmm.
One other quick lifestyle tweak that I want to mention is that there's certain foods that actually slow down your thyroid function. They have a funny name. They're called goitrogens. Have you heard that word before, Jackie?
I haven't, but I am all ears. Foods that slow down your thyroid function.
Yeah, and it's funny because they are foods that you often are told are just the best superfoods in the world and you should just eat them up every day. So this includes the brassica family. So that means broccoli and kale and Brussels sprouts, those things, those green things that we're always telling people to eat, low glycemic index vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And if you eat them raw, they can slow down your thyroid function. Now, they're good for your estrogen. We're going to talk next time about how they're good for your estrogen, but they can slow down your thyroid function if you just steam them lightly. If you cook them a little bit, you get rid of most of that thyroid problem. The other goitrogen to know about is soy, isoflavones. And this is interesting. I just reviewed a study looking at one serving of isoflavones can reduce your free T3 by up to 7%.
Oh, my gosh. And when you're saying isoflavone, is that soy? Is that the soy as we know it, edamame,
yes.
Soy sauce? Okay.
Yes. So there's some controversy about this, but the best study that I could find really showed a 7% effect. Now, that's modest, but if you have a thyroid issue, I think it's important to stay away from soy. There's the whole GMO conversation, too, that I think we're not going to get into today.
Absolutely. And also to reiterate, too, because I know that many people at Peer Trainer take, you know, different information and put it together. Remember in Japan that when they're eating soy, they're eating it completely as a condiment, this little side thing. I know when people go vegan, one of the issues is that they start to substitute all their meats and their animal proteins for almost all soy-based alternatives. So I'm glad that you are that's a study. And again, you know, many people get rid of soy altogether, and it's very controversial. But just to reiterate, in many of these cultures, that soy is the condiment. It doesn't become the main part of the meal by any means.
That's right. And, you know, we know from really great research looking at the Japanese, they have the lowest rates of breast cancer and prostate cancer on the planet. They're a cold spot for breast and prostate cancer, one of the things that happens there is not only do they eat it as a condiment, it's usually fermented, and they have it over their entire lives. They have it when they're in utero. They have it when they're babies. It's not like what we tend to do in the U.S. where we suddenly start eating a lot of it, you know, maybe in our 30s or 40s or 50s. So it's a very different exposure than what you see in Japan. I think that's a really
great clarification. And that's something I actually didn't know. And we'll talk about this in a completely different, as an aside, but, you know, maybe the difference between fermented soy versus regular. But I think everyone understands that, you know, hey, there's a study. If you already have high levels here, it's just, remember, it's always a layered approach. The sum is greater than its parts. So you never just want to say one thing, but as you start to peel these things away and make small changes in a lot of these different areas, then you get a completely different result.
That's right. And I think it's important to kind of move away from that either or paradigm that we see so much of in nutrition and in medicine. And it's not that I'm saying everyone must stay away from soy. What I'm saying is limit yourself to 2 servings per week.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, choose the fermented type. So by that I mean miso.
I actually personally don't have soy just because I never really liked it to begin with. And when I have sushi now, I never dip it in soy sauce. I don't even dip it in gluten-free sauce. I make my own mix of lemon and wasabi. And when I first did it, I thought, I did this because my husband had so many gluten issues, and I didn't really feel like making him jealous of me being able to just eat whatever I wanted. So we started to come up with all these different alternatives. You know, for me personally, it's just not something I even have substitutes of. I just don't eat it because I never cared for it to begin with.
Yes, I really don't have it either. But the other word I was trying to think of was tempeh. So tempeh is another form of fermented soy. Anyway, so that's kind of the first part, Gottfried Protocol Part 1, which is first the lifestyle tweaks and then the nutritional gaps that you're filling in. And then we're adding in that little piece about heavy metals, such as mercury. You may want to consider testing if you have any symptoms of mercury problems. And the interesting thing when it comes to thyroid, it actually keeps the solutions a little bit shorter. When it comes to step 2, which is to use proven herbal therapies, proven botanicals, none of the botanicals that I found and that I was prescribed, mostly by Ayurvedic physicians over the years, none of them have been proven to be effective in humans and proven to be helpful for the thyroid. So I'm just going to mention a couple of them because they're not proven, and I don't want you to take them. One is called bladder rack. Bladder rack. I won't even spell it because I don't want you to take it. They have funny names because they're Ayurvedic. The other one that I was prescribed was Conchinar Gugulu. Conchinar Gugulu. So neither of those have been proven to be effective. So I don't have any herbal therapies that really help you with your thyroid, which means that we move next to step 3 of the Gottfried Protocol, which is bioidentical hormones for the shortest duration and at the lowest dose to resolve your symptoms. So a couple of things about bioidentical hormones. I think it's really important to acknowledge individual variation here. And this is one of those cases where I think of when people fill their nutritional gaps and their vitamin D is right where we want it, say it's about 70, and their iron is in the normal range, and copper, zinc, all those things are where we want them. They've cut out the gluten, and they're still having a problem with symptoms and with their labs. That's when I tell people that it's a lot like shoe shopping when you start on a bioidentical for the thyroid, meaning that it's really hard to nail it the first time you get a pair of shoes. You know, what happens is about 60% of the time I'll nail it with the first choice that I make. You know, I make kind of an educated guess based on the laboratory tests for what to start.
Mm-hmm.
And typically I'll start with something called natural desiccated thyroid. You probably have heard of this before. Mm-hmm. There's some controversy about this in terms of it being regulated by the FDA, but the options there include Armour thyroid and also Naturethroid.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to have really good experience with Naturethroid. So a lot of women really love this. You know, there's whole thyroid communities, as you might imagine, that have grown up around advocates who are big fans of certain medications versus others, and many women really swear by Armour or Naturethroid. Another option is to get started on T4, and that goes by a lot of different names, Synthroid. There's a new one called Tyrosint, T-I-R-O-S-I-N-T. I like that one because it's gluten-free, and it's also a liquid soft gel. Mm-hmm. So if you have issues with digestion, it's a little easier to absorb. It's made in Europe, and it just got approved here a short while ago. Levothyroxine is another name for T4. But for women who have a problem with T3, like their T4 is fine. I told you about this patient of mine that I saw.
Yes.
Giving her T4 is not going to help her. So in that woman, I actually gave her some T3. And T3 goes by a couple different names. There's Cytomel. And then this is one place where I sometimes will compound some T3. So this is where you'd have to see a doctor to prescribe these things. But the Cytomel works really well in some people. In other people, it's too activating. So I told you how the T3 boosts your metabolism. It can make your heart rate go up. It can make your mood good. But for some people, it's just a little too much of a rev.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an uncomfortable feeling of their heart racing. And when that happens, when they're really sensitive to T3, I'll sometimes compound it into a slow-release formula. So those are the different options for the bioidenticals. And just a reminder, I think you know this, but the bioidenticals are exact replicas of what your body has always made. So it's not anything foreign to your body.
Mm-hmm. Just to reiterate, in the step 3 part of the protocol, these bioidenticals, this is something that your physician prescribes. This is not something that you can ever think about doing on your own. Correct.
That's right. That's right. I wouldn't want you to go to Canada and get your own prescription for this. I think it's very important to be working with a trusted clinician if you're at step 3.
Okay. All right. So we just talked about, obviously, the step 1, the step 2, the step 3 of the Gottfried protocol with the thyroid. So let's, if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Sarah, let's recap, you know, what the functioning thyroid looks like, or you're in the optimal range.
Yeah, so if you think about that mythical 20-year-old or 25-year-old who's the perfect hormonal specimen, and, you know, as long as she doesn't have a family history of thyroid problems and she's not
right.
struggling with her thyroid, what it looks like is that she has a completely normal, forgiving metabolism. Her weight is stable. You know, she looks at a piece of cake and it doesn't immediately land on her hips. People don't recoil in horror when they shake her hands because she doesn't have freezing cold hands.
Mm.
Her hairdresser doesn't stare in alarm at her hair, at the texture, at the part that keeps getting whiter and whiter, at the loss of the eyebrows and the eyelashes. There's not more and more money being spent on mascara. And she's also just feeling that zip in her step. You know, her sex life is normal. It's what she wants. And she is really feeling like she's got the buoyancy to move forward with her life's work. She feels like she blooms when she wants to. Life does not feel hard.
How do all of you feel when you think of this? I'm listening to this saying, okay, you know what? I want to feel like that again. I want to be back to the way I was in my 20s.
Well, I totally agree with you, and it reminds me of a little story. Can I share one last little
Please.
Story, Jackie?
Yes.
So my mother, who lives in Oregon, and she told me it was okay to share this story, so I got her permission first. My mom is 65, and I did a thyroid panel on her. I did a whole hormone panel on her because I had some suspicions, as you might imagine. And I found that her thyroid function was low, even though she had had her thyroid tested every year with her primary care physician. So I found that her free T3 was low, her TSH was right in that borderline range of about 2.7. Mm-hmm. And what I did was to go through with her how treating her thyroid also helps with prevention of Alzheimer's disease. So we've got some Alzheimer's disease in my family. I don't want to develop Alzheimer's. I don't want my mother to develop it. I don't want anybody having it. And we know for people who have a TSH above 2.0, there's an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. Anyway, we decided to start her on a very low dose after we did the Gottfried protocol step one. We ended up choosing a very low dose of Natrathroid, something called a quarter grain. And she found within 7 days that she was significantly better in terms of her mood, in terms of her weight. She had swelling that disappeared. A lot of the achiness that she had and some injuries that she had in joints, like her shoulder and her knee, got better. And here's the part that was so thrilling for me. She has a house on the beach in Oregon, and she found herself running up the stairs. And she called me and she said, "Oh my gosh, I haven't run up the stairs at my house in 20 years.
Wow.
So she ran up the stairs and she was like, "Oh my gosh, I haven't done that in decades." So that's the kind of change that we're looking for here. You know, I talked about getting bounce in your step again. This is literally bounce in your step.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, I'm so glad that you shared that, because I do think that people notice when they have those bursts of energy or something that feels like they used to, and that's going to be a great marker after you start to make these changes and you look at, you know, you go to your physician, you get your levels done, and just knowing that that's something that's possible that can happen in such a short amount of time. I think many of us are reluctant to doing things because we go, "Okay, well, I guess in a year I'll start to see what happens." And so many things, so many of the examples that you've given are really short amount of time. And I know you're not promising that that'll happen in a short amount of time, but just you keep giving patients stories that's 3 days, 1 week, things that you're really noticing in terms of a real change that you can grasp onto and say, "Okay, wow, this could work. This is going to be something that I can do." I really am so excited to hear from people after they listen to this class, and of course after they've listened to the cortisol as well. Again, this will be, you know, the wrap-up of part two of the thyroid class. And next time we're going to be talking, do you imagine there's actually another part of this, the Charlie's Angels, which we all know there are three, and I'm excited to see how much I'm going to learn about how estrogen plays into this and all this crosstalk that you're talking about. Because I don't know if you're listening, if you sort of felt the same way as I did, but once I heard cortisol, I go, "Okay, well, gosh, I have the, you know, cortisol. When I attack cortisol, I'm going to, you know, really feel differently." But knowing that they're all these three parts and they all play together really makes you see the context and how this can, the umbrella over all of these things and how this is going to significantly change your weight loss efforts and how you feel and things like that. So again, next part will be about estrogen. Please write us. Please post in the team. Dr. Sir, if you have anything to add, be here. Otherwise, we will see you in the next class.
Well, let me add one quick thing. You know I can't resist.
Which I love. It's always informative. I'm always learning something else.
Well, I love that you mentioned that sometimes you see quick changes. And I know how motivating those are. You know, as someone who struggled with my own weight until my 30s, when I really figured out the hormonal Charlie's Angels, how to get those in place, and when they're in place, it's so much easier to manage your weight. When I figured that out, it made all the difference for me. So I do want to enunciate that point about how when you're highly attuned, when you're looking at these symptoms that we're talking about, when you're measuring your waist, gentle reminder to measure your waist, when you're tracking things like you know, when was the last time you ran up the stairs? Mm-hmm. It's when you're highly attuned that you really start to notice these changes and how hormones affect so much of your life. So I think it's important to see attunement, and then also to say that there are some people who can take 4 to 6 weeks to really see some progress. You know, for me, for instance, it took me a while to get all the mercury out of my system. Mm-hmm. But once I did that and I got my copper fixed, it just made all the difference with my thyroid function. So I just wanted to emphasize that point that you made, Jackie.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is fantastic. Again, like even just thinking it could be somewhere between 3 days and 6 weeks versus, you know, making all this effort that a lot of people make every day and they're not even seeing anything for 3 months. I think that that is just an important distinction. So again, you know, email us, post in the team, and we will see you in the next class on estrogen. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much. It's been fantastic. This is a fantastic class.
My pleasure. So happy to be with you, Jackie. Thanks for having me, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.